Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 307. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about futuristic cities, vast grasslands, and ships stranded in a desert as we go to Kazakhstan. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have three news stories for you. Perhaps your mother tucked you in at night and said, "Don't let the bed bugs bite." Well, that was a problem that flyers had recently on a Delta Airlines flight to New York. I suspect this is a story, unfortunately, we're probably going to hear again. Unfortunately, bed bugs reminds me of hotels. And a surprising story about hotels is, even as the U.S. troops are pulling out of Iraq, U.S. hotel companies are moving in. Best Western recently broke ground on two hotels, and then Hilton and Marriott are also opening hotels in 2013 and 2014. And then this is a strange idea. Carnival Cruises is doing something different. They're doing the first horror convention at sea. This April, they're going to be showing a series of horror films on a Carnival cruise. This itself sounds like the making of a bad horror film. For links to all these stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome back to the show Mike from Toronto, who has been on the show twice before, once talking about southern Taiwan and also talking to us about Hiroshima, and you've come back on the show to talk to us about Kazakhstan. Mike, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Chris.
So you're just trying to go someplace a little more obscure every year, is that right?
Well, yeah, I ended up in Kyrgyzstan doing a two-month internship, and I decided I wanted to see the rest of the Central Asian region. And every time I asked people about Kazakhstan, the only thing they really knew was Borat, and that can't be a just representation of the entire country. And when I checked a lot of the other travel blogs and experiences, people didn't really have a good time there, so I really wanted a challenge. I go, there can't be a country that's the ninth biggest in the world and not be exciting and full of history and all these kind of things.
And so let's start with that. Were you right, in your opinion, now that you've been there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a gorgeous country. It's just huge. It's huge and flat. So if you don't have time, you can't see all these wonderful things that are there.
Cool. And what kind of things? Why should we go to Kazakhstan?
Well, Kazakhstan is kind of in an identity crisis at the moment. Traditionally, they're this old nomadic Mongolian culture. They're one of the hordes that settled there after Genghis Khan kicked the bucket. And now, with all the oil and all the gas and all these natural resources, it's developing really, really, really fast. So in the very west end of the country, you have old mosques and things like this. Well, in the new capital, Astana, you have futuristic buildings which seem like they shouldn't even be in the country. Astana is the new capital. Almaty was the old capital, and now Astana is the new capital in the very far north near Siberia.
Okay.
And it's kind of crazy. They hired all these international architects to build these futuristic buildings. They have a giant mall that looks like a yurt, and they have like a base needle looking thing. And for Kazakhstan, like as you see the terrain in other parts of the country, it's a lot of old Russian cottages or yurts in some places and, you know, Soviet style block buildings. And all of a sudden you get to Astana and it's these huge futuristic nouveau looking buildings. And you don't understand how you got there or why they're there. Or, well, most of them are residences or shopping malls, but from the outside, you're just kind of amazed. You think that you've stepped 30 years in the future and you don't know how you got to this kind of magnificent city.
And it looks like the capital only moved, what, 13 years ago or so?
Yeah, very recently. It was a political move because they were afraid China was going to take over Almaty.
All right.
But when I took this trip, I actually came in from the train from Uzbekistan. And when you're coming in from Uzbekistan, you have a choice to stop in two cities. You can either stop in Aktau or Atrau. Aktau I couldn't go to because it's famous for these underground mosques and a lot of these sites in the desert, but it's very expensive to go see them. It would have cost me about $400 or $500 to see these sites. So I skipped it for the next closest city, which is Atrau. It's kind of like Istanbul. Half the city is situated in Europe, while half the city is situated in Asia. And because it's a big expat hub, because people are taking oil out of the Caspian, it kind of developed this expat nightlife kind of multicultural kind of feel to it.
So it's not physically sitting in Europe, but you're saying culturally it's half European and half Asian.
No. Physically, there's a bridge. One end of the bridge is in Europe and the other end of the bridge is in Asia.
Okay.
But like I said, Atrau is a expat kind of industrial city. But what's important is that when you come into Kazakhstan, you have 5 days to register. And if you don't speak Russian or you don't speak Kazakh, dealing with the militia can be a little bit of a problem. So try to go to one of these cities if you're coming into the country. If you fly in, you don't have to register. But if you're coming in by land, try to go to a city where the militia is used to dealing with foreigners so that they'll register you without too much of a hassle.
So easier to register in a big city than it is in one of the smaller towns, is what you're saying.
Well, not only that, but a big expat city.
Got it. Okay.
And, you know, it's a nice place to spend the night because, I don't know, if you've been in other parts of Central Asia, you don't really find things like coffee and variations of food that doesn't have mutton in it and things like this. So, you know, spend the night in this multicultural kind of expat city and enjoy just the feeling of being in a city before you go off to your next adventure. And then after Atrau, I went off to Turkestan. And Turkestan is further south in the country. And what makes this area very important is it has the last Timur-era building that has not collapsed or been rebuilt in all of Central Asia. So if you go to Uzbekistan and go to Samarkand and Bukhara and Kiva, all these old buildings are built by a guy named Timur. He was like a leader of the period. And they've all been rebuilt. Well, in Turkestan, it's the last original one, and it's absolutely stunning. It's the mausoleum for one of the kings. It's called the Yasai Mausoleum. And if you go inside, you'll probably be taken in to partake in prayer sessions with the people there. And the museum is very interesting. And I was had a weird experience where the cultural center who runs the place kidnapped me to do some translations for them. They don't really see Western tourists in this area of the country very often. And they're trying to build it up for that clientele. So it was interesting to deal with locals who really wanted foreigners to be there and kind of wanted to see your perspective of it.
And so they had some brochure that they wanted to sure make sense in real English.
Well, yeah, not only the brochure, but they wanted to try to translate the signs and ended up spending an entire extra day there with the cultural center trying to help them set it up. But if you go to Uzbekistan, you'll notice that a lot of these buildings have been built for tourists. Like there's nice bistros kind of around it. There's little golf carts that take you around. But when you go to Turkestan, it feels very authentic and you can feel it being a holy site. Where I think other regions, these mausoleums have lost that feeling. So this is very important. I think if you go to Kazakhstan and you want to see history, you should go to Turkestan and see this mausoleum.
Okay. And when you say the language, this is a Turkic state in the sense that the people are, you said Islam, but also Turkish, or at least related to, as I recall.
Their language is Turkish-based, yes.
Yeah.
But if you can speak Russian, that's probably more beneficial than it is to speak Kazakh.
Okay.
The entire country speaks Russian. They're trying to bring Kazakh back as the official language, but still, if you're speaking to older generations and young people, everyone understands Russian.
Okay.
But young people speak English in Kazakhstan pretty frequently. It's not that hard to find someone to help you in English.
That was my next question, is even though you had some problems, for instance, with visas and things like that, with the officialdom,
yes,
it isn't that people weren't speaking English anywhere during their visit.
No, militia don't speak English. The police don't speak English. They say passport, passport, and they might say money, money, you know, and then you pretend you don't speak Russian and you walk away as fast as you can. But young people, university students, they'll speak English, and high school students will start to speak English.
And when you say you walk away as fast as you can, you're saying that there are fees that may be assessed that are not official.
Yeah, the cops are crooked. So one tip, if we're going to get to this early while you're in Kazakhstan, is that by law, the militia is not allowed to touch your passport. If they ask you to see your passport and see your document and see your registration slip, show it to them without actually giving it to them. Because if you give it to them, they're going to want money to get it back in most occasions. And if you're in some small village or some small town, not Almaty, not Astana, not Shymkent, the odds of getting out of the situation without hassle, not danger to your life, but without some annoyance is very low.
Interesting. Okay. Without some sort of backsheesh.
Yes, exactly. So, like I said, Turkestan is a beautiful historic town, but it's very small. So you only need one day to be here. And then you can go to the Aral Sea. I don't know if you know much about the ship graveyard that exists in Kazakhstan.
I've heard, yeah, some about it, but not a whole lot.
So essentially what happened is that the Soviets used the Aral Sea to do all these cotton irrigation projects. And as the sea receded, the ships that were there stayed there. So now when you go to the steppe, there's essentially these rusted ships in the middle of the desert that got there because the sea receded so slowly that they didn't bring them back. And up until about 3 or 4 years ago, there were 13 of these ships. But due to rust and whatever, they scrapped them. And now there's three. And it's kind of a cool experience to go to there because, A, you're in the middle of the desert and there's this one huge rusted fishing ship and these two other smaller ships. You can go inside the ships and all this. And I never saw camels before. So I went to this desert and as I'm on the train, I start seeing herds of camels and I'm getting very excited because I've never seen camels in herds, at least. I've seen them in the zoo and such. And the Kazakh guy on the train with me is looking at me like I'm nuts. And so it's kind of an interesting place to see, A, the desert and, you know, camels if you've never seen them before. And then, two, to see these ships. And you can't go see the ships on your own, unfortunately, because they're too far in. You have to arrange the trip with an NGO that does fishery projects. Hmm. And essentially, he'll meet you at the Raskore More train station, and he'll take you to see the site. And it's really cool if you do this because my guide, I was very lucky, was very knowledgeable about the history and the times of how this all happened and a lot about current Kazakhstan politics and culture and history. So it was really nice to have a guide who knew a lot about where we were going. And, you know, he got me there in one piece, which doesn't always happen when you're traveling around Central Asia.
Mm-hmm. Were there other places in Kazakhstan that you were using local guides?
No, because the big problem with Kazakhstan is that it's very, very expensive. Mm-hmm. I had to pick essentially one big excursion that I wanted to do because it was more than $100 to see these boats. And if you're a backpacker like me, it's a little bit difficult to do this. But if you want to go see other sites like those mosques that I told you about in Aktau, or if you want to go to like nature expeditions, then you're going to have to use local guides. And most of the local guides are part of NGOs. It's a lot of locally started environmental NGOs who are providing these services for the tourists.
Hmm.
Another tip is that the only other alternative to using these NGOs is using travel agents in Almaty. And the Almaty travel agents will charge you 2 or 3 times as much as the NGOs. So if you're on a budget and you really want like an authentic experience with locals, then try to find the NGO that's working in that area and use their services.
And how did you locate them?
Well, I'm not very proud of this, but I was a Lonely Planet snob this trip because not many people had gone to Kazakhstan. I had found a few blogs, and a lot of the blogs, only the people went to Almaty, or they only went to Turkestan, or they only went to Astana. So I didn't really have a lot to go on. So I literally opened up my Lonely Planet and made a makeshift map of where I was going. And when I got to the town, I would try to email whatever the NGO was that was working there or the travel agency and use them to get feedback on what I should be doing or what I should be seeing.
Okay. Since you were using the Lonely Planet guide, and it sounds like that worked fairly well for you.
Yes, it did.
Were there things that you would correct? Were you the editor of Lonely Planet for the next edition?
No, they did the best that they could, I think, for this particular month. They should update the prices. I think the prices are off.
That's always a problem with the tour business in general.
And if anybody's interested in finding the ecotourism office in Almaty, it moved. So call them before you go find them because they're hiding in some little street and they've had a lot of problems with that. So a lot of the locations of buildings have changed too, but these are common issues with the Lonely Planet, right?
Sure. Well, with most guidebooks.
So I think for what it did, it had a lot of good points, and it gave you the minimum that you needed to kind of navigate each location.
Was there anything you discovered while you were on the ground that you hadn't read about before you went? A destination or a site, for instance, that you really only heard of from local?
Semeh. Semeh is in the Lonely Planet, right? But the way that they make it sound is that it's kind of, you only go there because you want to go to the nuclear polygon, which is essentially this area in Kazakhstan that had been used for nuclear testing. And you can, if you go to a city called Karaganda, you can arrange a tour that this tour agency will take you to the desert in a radioactive suit and you can, and you can, you know, experience the test site. But
okay, I would have crossed that off my list really quickly.
Like I said, I can only pick one place to have my grand excursion, and I didn't want to risk cancer. So I decided to go to Semeh anyways because I had heard stories of how nice the art gallery was there. and just how it's a nice little quaint town. I think anybody who ends up in northern Kazakhstan has to go to this town of Semeh just for a day. Architecturally, it's beautiful. It's full of these little quaint Russian cabins, and the snow had just fallen, so the atmosphere was beautiful. There's a really gorgeous Russian Orthodox church there. There's a series of gorgeous mosques. The town just has a good feeling to it, like something that I haven't felt in the other Kazakh towns, especially because tourists don't really show up in these places, so they're a little bit shocked to see you to begin with. Mm-hmm. And then you get to the art gallery, and I'm an art fan, but I don't understand art. I like to go just to kind of experience it. And it's set up as a place where you're meant to spend the day almost. There's nice benches in between each gallery. The artwork is from all over the world. They have some really rare Rembrandt sketches as well as Central Asian art. And I almost spend half my day just in the art gallery because of the quality of the works of art and just the amount of time you want to spend absorbing it.
And was this traditional Kazakh art, or what kind of art are you looking at?
It's a mixture of Soviet art.
Okay.
And Western art and traditional Kazakh art. And I think what must be nouveau Kazakh art, because a lot of it was, I think there was a picture of there of Whitney Houston. I don't know why.
Okay.
But there was a painting of Whitney Houston done by a famous Kazakh artist. And I couldn't speak Russian or Kazakh, so I didn't understand the connection, but she really wanted me to see it.
She's huge in Kazakhstan. Yeah.
But Kazakhs, it's kind of weird at the moment because the Russians did a big number on trying to destroy Kazakh culture and destroy Kazakh identity. Mm-hmm. So there's a real resurgence now of people being very proud to be Kazakh, being very proud to be Muslim. So there was a big gallery, and it basically showcased a lot of traditional instruments and a lot of old petroglyphs are all over Kazakhstan. So if you're really interested in ancient Stone Age history, you can see a lot of the rock carvings and stuff like this. And these are usually showcased in the art museums. And this particular art museum had a very interesting display of this. A lot of nomadic kind of paintings and yurt paintings and things like this. But it was a nice mixture of Western art, Soviet art, and then traditional and nouveau Kazakh art.
Okay. And I think you were still on your itinerary, and I interrupted you, took you off the track there for a little bit, talking about the Lonely Planet. Where else did you go?
Well, after Turkestan, I went to Shymkent. And one of the reasons that I was in Central Asia is I was actually researching sustainable tourism approaches in the region. And somebody told me I should go to the Aksu Zabalagili Nature Reserve. Okay, I don't know how to pronounce that, and I gave you the name of it in the notes I sent you, so please post it for the people. But it's about an hour and a half from Shymkent, and it's a nature reserve where if you're interested in flora and bird watching, you should definitely go, because there's some rare tulips that show up there in the spring, and bird migration patterns, I think going from the Middle East up into Russia or something like this, you can only see the birds going through this area. I made a big mistake when I went to Kazakhstan, because I went in the winter. And I don't know if you know anything about Kazakhstan in the winter, that it's minus 20 and there's snow all over the place. So I didn't get to experience the nature reserve probably to its highest extent. But it was interesting to see what would have been there in the spring and what they would have been doing normally. And I think Kazakhstan's tourism is basically localized. A lot of people who come to Kazakhstan are expats working there. And I think they really want foreigners to visit. And it's kind of interesting to have this nature reserve in the middle of nowhere that they open it up kind of quasi-illegally to let tourists go in and see it, because it's a nature reserve, you're not supposed to actually go in. And it gives them the opportunity to see these strains of tulips that you wouldn't see normally and these bird migrations that you wouldn't see normally. And one of the people living there, his last name was Russell, and he was this Dutch man who married a Kazakh woman, is starting all sorts of interesting like tourism plans. Or he's exploring the country with him and his wife, essentially, to open it up to tourists. So if you're interested in kind of seeing what's going on in southern Kazakhstan, you should definitely call this guy, because he's talking to old fishermen and finding forgotten trade routes and kind of all sorts of crazy stuff.
Interesting.
After I went to Shymkent, I went to Almaty. And most tourists end up in Almaty. There's a reason for this. It's gorgeous. For a Soviet country, the city feels European in atmosphere. It's the kind of place with nice boutiques and really, really good coffee shops. And I don't know, after being in Central Asia for 4 months, I really needed good coffee. And there's a lot of nice history. There's cathedrals dedicated to St. Peter, and there's an Islamic study center, and it's this beautiful golden mosque. And Kazakhstan is a little bit different than other Central Asian republics because they actually have grocery stores. A lot of the other Central Asian republics you visit, you basically just go to a bazaar to buy your vegetables and such. But in Kazakhstan, there's a lot of grocery stores. So it was nice to see in Almaty this huge green bazaar where you're able to buy any type of vegetable and fruit. And if you're a backpacker going to Kazakhstan, you're probably going to live off of a samsa. And a samsa is essentially a meat pie. They sell them on the street corners and all this kind of stuff. But when you go to the green bazaar, it's like 20 stalls selling samsas. So it's kind of this interesting experience where you can try, you know, 100 different kinds of Kazakhstan street meat.
Cool.
Yeah. And I don't know, I like to try local vegetables and local fruits and all this kind of stuff. And if you like dry fruit, then the Green Bazaar is the place to go, because you don't even have to buy it. They just kind of feed it to you slowly so that you try it, so you can buy it from the stalls. So you can try every kind of dried fruit and dried vegetable just wandering through the alleys of this bazaar.
Okay. And where else did you go in?
Amadi.
Well,
Amadi is really cool too, because there's another really nice art museum, and the regional museum is really cool. If you like history, because I know you do.
You know I do.
There's a really good exhibit about like Kazakh history and Kazakh culture. And then there's a lot of other exhibits about the other nations that are staying in Kazakhstan. Basically, Stalin shoved a lot of Germans and Koreans and other nations that he didn't trust into Kazakhstan. So there's a lot of exhibits about immigration that happened in Kazakhstan. So if you're really into history and you're really into like social dynamics, then you should definitely go to the regional museum.
So you're saying when he depopulated Manchuria, say, and East Prussia, he sent the people down to Kazakhstan?
Yes. Yeah, and there was a lot of immigration from Korea, and there's a lot of immigration from China there, and it kind of talks about all these different factors that makes Kazakhstan what it is. And if you're really into doing something touristy, there's a mountain called Kobite where you can take the cable car to this mountain. And I was a little bit surprised, because as I started walking around, I started hearing Beatles music everywhere. And there's this bizarre copper statue of the Beatles. And this is a weird thing that I noticed as I traveled through Kazakhstan, that they have some kind of obsession with the Beatles. There's cafes with the Beatles plastered over it, stores with the Beatles plastered over it. I read a book, and apparently there's a very famous Beatles cover band in Kazakhstan. So it was this trend that I had noticed, then it all accumulated onto this mountain in Almaty. And it's kind of cool, because apparently the statue is the only statue in the world with all four Beatle members present.
I would have thought there would have been other ones, but okay.
Well, that's its claim to fame. And if you're a really big Beatles fan, then you can go up to the mountain to see it. And that's another reason to come to Kazakhstan, right? Almaty is the kind of city where you go to for 2 or 3 days and you wander, because it's huge. You know, you can spend one day seeing the museums and the art galleries and going up to Koktebe. And then you can spend one day kind of just taking in the metropolitan feel. And then what I would do on the third day is go to Medeo. And Medeo is, they basically had the Asian Olympics in Almaty last year, Almaty and Astana, and they built an Olympic-sized skating rink in the mountains. And it's beautiful. It doesn't cost that much to go. I think it's about $15 to rent the skates and get inside. And for Kazakhstan, that's pretty cheap. And you can spend 2 hours going around, and the surrounding mountains are absolutely beautiful. And it's really weird. If you go skating in Kazakhstan, I don't know if it's tradition or if I was just there on a weird day, but the older men who skate around seem to like to do it without their shirt on. So you get this wonderful atmosphere of older men without their shirts on skating around you and throwing snow on themselves every once in a while. Not only do you get the Olympic feel, but you get an aspect of Kazakh culture while you're skating.
Now, even though you mentioned camels, I did not get the impression you were getting around via camels in Kazakhstan.
No, the best way to get around in Kazakhstan is trains or buses. I don't think you ever really need to use a taxi unless you're in the countryside. But even then, you can't really hitchhike. Like, people expect to be paid in Kazakhstan. If you put out your thumb, they're going to still expect to be paid. So my best bet would either to be a bus or marshuka, which is like a minibus. So it's a smaller type of transport in the cities. And then using trains and buses for long-term travel.
And you said that there were some things to know if you're taking the train in terms of different classes of service, for instance.
There's three classes of service, apparently, in the train. I only know the name for two of them because I couldn't afford the other one and they wouldn't give it to me. So you can either take Platzkart or Cooper. Cooper is basically an enclosed room with four beds. So every cart in the train has bunk bed style cabins, right? So the only difference is one, you can have a private cabin with four beds, or one is an open style cabin with multiple beds. And Platzkart would be this open style cart. So you can see all the way down. You see everybody in the train with you. While the Cooper, you only have four beds and you can close it. And the cleanliness is a little bit higher and all this kind of stuff.
And the one that's open has still just four beds, or does it have the six beds like the Chinese night train?
Well, what it will have is it will have four beds and then it will have two beds in front of it. So the hallway, there'll be the hallway with two and then four in the compartment.
Okay.
And you got to be a little bit careful on the train too. You remember how I was talking about these corrupt official type things? A lot of the night trains aren't at a reasonable time. You might have a train at 12 o'clock at night or 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock. I've had a train at 3 o'clock because it takes a lot of time to get from point A to point B. So God knows when the train actually leaves and when you can get a bed on it. But if you get into a bed at around midnight or past 1 o'clock, the cabin guards will want to put you in a Cooper if you're in a Platz cart because they bank the money from the exchange. They don't have to give it to the train company. They can keep it themselves. So if you argue with and you don't want to move, you might not get your sheets for the bed and you might not get your pillow. This happened to me 3 times. Twice I won the battle. Once I didn't win the battle and I was too tired and I just went to sleep on the board and I didn't care. But like, you don't often get problems in Kazakhstan in comparison to the other places I've been, but you got to be careful on the trains and you got to be careful with the cops when they want to see your passport because there's usually an item of financial want.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But it also depends. Trains also take a lot more time than buses. So if you can be in a bus for 15 hours or 16 hours and fall asleep and not need the comfort of a bed, then I would do that the majority of the time because it would save you a lot of time traveling and it's cheaper than using the train.
Okay. And then you were also staying on a budget in terms of where you were sleeping when you weren't on the train.
Yes, I couch surfed almost the entire country. But this was the best idea that I think I had the entire trip. I stayed in one hotel in Turkestan because it was very cheap. It was $10 a night. And I kind of needed my solidarity after being on a train for so long from Uzbekistan and previously. But if you couch surf in Kazakhstan, locals will always take you in. I was surprised with how quickly I got accepted when I sent out my request. I actually had points where like 6 people would say yes, and I had to decide which person I wanted to stay with.
Hmm.
And like, I'm a big guy, I'm loud, and like, I'm kind of scared when the only people I have to choose from are women in a certain town because I'm afraid they're going to say no. But in this case, too, a lot of them let me stay with them. So I wouldn't worry too much about the gender dynamics, especially if you have good references on your couch surfing site. She might bring a friend over. But this is cool because you get to meet 2 people instead of one. But I think couch surfing in Kazakhstan was the highlight of my trip because I got to really get in with the locals and got to talk and like spend the evening and hear about what it's like living in Kazakhstan. They took me to some cool restaurants or they made me local food or they taught me about some strange customs. So it was kind of cool.
And my take is that you loved some of the local food and there was at least a few dishes that you did not ask for the recipe.
Well, the only thing I have to admit that I really hate is something called kumeh, which is fermented horse milk. And it's kind of salty, and it's kind of vodka-y, and it's kind of milky, and you always have to drink a lot of it if they give it to you, and it's not exactly the nicest combination of things. But you don't really have much options in Central Asia when it's coming to eating. It's usually shashlik, which is kebab, anti, which is like a dumpling with some kind of meat inside, lagaman, which is a noodle soup with some kind of meat inside, perlini, which is a kind of soup with some meat inside, sherpa, which is the kind of soup with some meat and a potato. So if you're a vegetarian, it's a kind of a nightmare if you're looking for traditional Kazakh food. But in the big cities, they've gotten very multicultural. There's a lot of Turkish places now in Kazakhstan, so if you're tired of the manti, you can have a shawarma and something else.
Okay.
A lot of travelers that I met that were traveling around Kazakhstan, especially, they were having a hard time finding vegetarian meals. So just a note that if you are a vegetarian traveling around the country, you should not go to the restaurants. Or if you're going to go to a restaurant, find like a Western-style cafe that will make you a salad because it's going to be very hard to get non-meat items.
So Kazakhstan's a little off the beaten path here. When did you feel closest to home and when did you feel furthest from home?
I felt closest to home in Almaty because it just felt like a metropolitan city. You didn't have to be in Kazakhstan. You could have been in Toronto. You could have been in, not Tokyo, but you could have been in a small metropolitan city in Japan or somewhere else. In Kazakhstan, I definitely felt farthest from home was when I looked out the window and I saw the steppe. Mm-hmm. The Kazakh steppe
is, which went on and on and on and on and on.
Yeah, is an overpowering feeling of nothingness. But a lot of people find it boring. To me, it was beautiful. I liked looking out the window and seeing this stuff. When you see like your first tumbleweed go across the window, you're like, oh my God, where am I? But the solidarity, the solitude, and this, the nature of it is quite beautiful.
Hmm. What surprised you?
What surprised me was how hospitable the people were. All you really need when you go onto a train in Kazakhstan is an empty cup and an empty dish. Because they're going to feed you the entire time. And I think it makes up for the language difficulty. If you can't speak Russian or Kazakh, they're still trying to feel like good hosts because it's very important for them to feel like good hosts. So they just feed you unconditionally. But This feeding is also like a ritual where you make friends, and I gave many an English lesson over a bowl of tea and cup noodles and things like this. So I was surprised on how binding food was on the long train rides.
And when you say long train rides, we're talking about a big country, so how long was your longest train ride?
25 hours.
Oh my, okay.
Yeah, you got to be careful on these rides because, yeah, it takes a long, long, long time. I went from Almaty to Ust-Kermanogorsk, which is a Russian-populated city in the northern part of Kazakhstan before going to Seme, and it took 25 hours. But my 25-hour train ride was also my favorite train ride. I made friends with a Kazakh military officer. We were doing English lessons. He fed me. He introduced me to the rest of the train. So I really cherished my long train rides. It's where I really got to know the people and really got to learn. If you want to learn where the Lonely Planet misses out on things, you learn it on the train. The locals at some point tell you something you didn't know.
And what was the best thing that you picked up that way?
I think it was to go to that national park that I went to in Shymkent. Yeah. Like, it was in the Lonely Planet, but I had brushed it off. And it was only after some high school students and some university students had convinced me to go there that I actually did the trip, and I don't regret it. As well as going to Ust-Kermanogorsk, because Ust-Kermanogorsk, there's nothing there. It's famous for a hockey team or something. But I was told to go see the monuments there because there's all these old Soviet-style monuments all over Kazakhstan. And, you know, after you see one guy holding a hammer and, like, flexing, you know, you've seen all the guys holding a hammer and flexing. But Ust-Kermanogorsk has a lot of really interesting old monuments and old style of architecture and things like this. So I was glad that somebody told me to go there just to see the city. I'm a wanderer. I like to just wander places. I don't need to go there for the tourist stuff. And Ust-Kermanogorsk is definitely a beautiful place to wander. And I wouldn't have known that unless somebody on the train told me.
And you talk about the guys flexing. When you were talking about earlier about Soviet art, the term that did not occur to me when you said Soviet art was subtle.
Well, like I said, it's not subtle, but it's repetitive.
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot of women in, like, angelic poses and a lot of men in very masculine poses. A lot of men who have been shot and are dying to represent the sacrifices in World War One and World War Two. The really interesting thing about monuments in Kazakhstan that I didn't know is that they advertise them like they would a movie. So maybe 200 or 300 kilometers from a town, if you're on the bus, you'll start seeing advertisements. And I couldn't read them because they were just multicolored banners with some outline of some kind of graphic. And when I got to the town, you see this giant golden monument. And the advertisements the entire way were for this giant golden monument because they just knocked out the Lenin statue and they replaced it with this.
Huh.
So they're very proud. Like I said, there's a lot of nationalism, a lot of new resurgence of feeling Kazakh. And you see this everywhere. And this is even seen in the monuments. They're getting rid of a lot of these old Soviet-style monuments and trying to replace them with Kazakh-themed monuments. And you'll always know when there's a new monument because there'll be advertisements the entire way to the town.
Interesting.
Yeah.
One thing that made you laugh and say only in Kazakhstan.
Oh, I was at the market and two guys started wrestling. Like hardcore, trying to not to throw the other guy over his shoulder. And apparently this is general roughhousing in Kazakhstan. If somebody tries to wrestle with me, I'm running. I don't know. I can't defend myself. So this like show of nomadic culture, you really see it. Like when you see people wrestling or when you see a guy run by you on a horse half an hour from Almaty or you see camels outside your window, this is when you know you're in Kazakhstan.
One picture that really brings you back to Kazakhstan.
The train. Whenever I see an image of a platskart, so all these beds in the middle of open space and people laughing and eating and talking, this is my image of Kazakhstan. It's not the town. It's the relationships I've made in the train rides.
So I've got three more questions for you before I ask my last three questions. Anything else you feel that people really should know before they go to Kazakhstan?
Yeah, Astana is being hyped as like this beautiful new metropolis, but it's very far from Almaty and it's very far from most points of entry. And I only advise going there if you are like an architect buff and you really need to see these futuristic buildings because there's nothing there to do as a tourist, really. And it's the most expensive city in all of Kazakhstan. I was very lucky. I stayed with a European Union diplomat who I had met previously in my trips, and he took me to all these cool places. But unless you have those kind of connections of somebody helping you to see the city, you should skip it. Don't skip Almaty. Don't skip Turkestan. Don't skip the Aral Sea to see these old ships or the expeditions into the mountains. But definitely skip Astana if you can.
Okay. One thing you should pack before you go to Kazakhstan, besides coffee, which is one of the things.
No, just I actually regretted not having a fork. Bring a fork. Because, like I said, people try to feed you a lot, and you can't eat all the different types of food just with your hands. Bring utensils with you. Bring a bowl, bring a cup, and bring a fork. Because, like, eating is so important there. Like, I've been fed in the weirdest places. I've been in the mall sitting down, and somebody just comes over and brings me food. It's like this. And I think you should also know that, like, Kazakh people are very aggressive in a sense. They don't smile. They don't ask you, how are you doing? How's your day? So bring a little bit of courage with you. Talk. If you need help, always ask for help, because they're more than happy to help you. They're just not going to show it.
Hmm. Interesting. Last two questions, and you know these two are coming.
Yes.
Finish this sentence. You really know you're in Kazakhstan when what?
You can't eat another piece of mutton.
And if you had to summarize Kazakhstan in three words, what three words would they be?
Nomadic.
Mm-hmm.
Transformative.
Mm.
And not Borat. Because a lot of travelers I met who went to this country had been inspired by this movie. And you can't think this way. It's the ninth largest country in the world. It's steeped in history, steeped in new everything. And it's nothing that you're already going to be thinking.
Excellent. Mike, thanks so much for coming back on The Amateur Traveler and telling us about your newfound love of Kazakhstan.
Thank you.
In news of the community, an interesting discussion this week in the Facebook community, facebook.com/amateurtraveler, about where would you go if you weren't afraid to go. And I was interested to see that some places showed up, like Colombia and Egypt, that I wasn't too surprised about, but actually one of the more popular choices was Australia, and just because of the long plane ride. That surprises me a little bit because my office and my home are 2,700 miles apart, so to me, a long plane ride is just a commute. Jim commented on the episode about the Ring of Kerry in Ireland, saying, "Kerry is without a doubt the most beautiful place I've been, and yes, I've been to Paris, but we haven't managed to view the Ring of Kerry yet. We tried to hire a local guide for it, but he was not available that day. Driving the ring would be scary on account of the tour buses and driving on the left. We did drive the next peninsula over, called Biara, and we had it to ourselves. It is also very beautiful. I can't believe Jesse's daughter went swimming in the water. I've never seen anyone swimming in Ireland, except Germans." Jim, thanks for your comments. Tony Mercer had some comments on the episode from Tampa. In fact, he had so many comments that there's now a blog post from Tony on things that you can see and do when you're in Tampa, Florida. And so, Tony, thank you very much for your contribution. And with that, I think we'll bring this episode of The Amateur Traveler to a close. Remember that there is a community that does have discussions going on at facebook.com/amateurtraveler. If you have any questions, you can also leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. If you have longer comments, you can do what Tony did and write a guest blog post for The Amateur Traveler. You can also email me at host@amateurtraveler.com or follow me on Twitter @Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening.